Lesson 30, and we're on David. I'm pretty sure, I know it's going to go into two parts. This may go into three parts before we're all done with just this particular set. We're talking about David, this man who the Lord said that he I want to find a man after my own heart, and this is where we're going to be spending some time. I was gonna go into and proving that David was not just a small boy when he fought Goliath, but I just felt compelled to go this direction. I may hit that at some other point, but tonight I want to kind of walk this. I'm gonna kind of walk this for maybe a few weeks. And it really, it's kind of a combination of the story of David and also the book of Psalms. And it's kind of interesting as I got into this. It was just kind of interesting some of the ways this all fits together. And so hopefully tonight it'll make sense. And maybe the next time you're reading the Psalms, they won't just seem like just, you know, a poem somewhere. But you'll actually see some heart and some meaning behind it. And so tonight I'm titling this A Man Sought After. I'm entitling this A Man Sought After. As we studied last week, and I've actually got a ton of pages already. I had to just stop is where I had to do tonight. I had to just stop where I was and say we're just done because I just have so much. As we studied last week, we found and we saw that David was not worthy to be king. It was of the grace and mercy of God that brought him to become king. And, you know, he was not worthy according to any of man's reasons. You know, or the reasons why man would choose and the reasons why man would want a king. He did not fit that. But we find one passage that defines why God called him. It was this calling that held David through the most difficult trials of his life. And it is found in 1 Samuel chapter 13. And many people look at this, and this verse is actually, and I've had people ask me different questions, but you have to understand when this verse was actually spoken. This was before David was ever king. This was actually before he was ever anointed. This was when God rejected Saul is when we find this passage about David. And it says this, "But now thy kingdom shall not continue. The Lord hath sought." I want you to notice that. He was a man that was sought. David was a man who was sought after. "The Lord hath sought him a man after his own heart. And the Lord hath commanded him to be captain over his people, because thou hast not kept that which the Lord commanded thee." Saul, because you haven't done what God has told you to do, I am seeking for a man. I'm going to find a man who is after my own heart. Not that a man that is pursuing, that a man that is chasing after, a man that is desiring me, a man who wants to be in relationship with me. That's who I want. That's the kind of king I want over my people. And so it's this man, and it's this passage that really defines who David was. It defines what would bring David through. It is this trial that I want to focus on tonight. Because as you know, we talked last week, David served Saul faithfully. He would not even raise a hand toward him. But yet Saul continually tried to kill David. Every turn, every chance, he wanted to kill him. He wanted to get rid of him. This no doubt had to be a very, very difficult day in his life. The one who was sought after by God was now sought after by Saul. I want you to grab a hold of that. This was a man sought after. God sought after him. And now we're going to see Saul seeking after David. Saul knew that he had blown it. He knew that God had rejected him and that God was going to take the kingdom from him. And he also knew that the hand of the Lord was upon David. He saw David's popularity rising. He saw that everything that David touched seemed to prosper. And Saul becomes jealous of David. So he decides that he himself would hunt David down like a wild animal and kill him. That is really what it's going to get to. What I want to show you, though, is how the man sought after was also a man who sought after. Catch that? The man who was sought after became a man who sought after. You'll find it here in a second. You see, while one sought after his life, while Saul was seeking after the life of David, David, in the most difficult situations of his own life, sought after the giver of life. While one was seeking after him, David was on a pursuit seeking after someone else. While one was trying to kill him, David was chasing after and pursuing the God of heavens. I'm going to show us this. This was so amazing to me. What I see here is a period that takes place in every great man's life. Anybody who accomplishes anything great for God, that's ever done things mighty for God, they have this testimony that says, if it had not been for the Lord who was on my side. Anybody who ever do something great for God has to have the testimony, if God hadn't seen me through it, if God wasn't for me, I would have been sunk. If it wasn't for the mercy of God, where would I be? If I'm going to do something for God, I'm going to have a testimony that says God has done something mighty in my own life. See, I can take you to Abraham. He had a trial in the wilderness. I can take you to Jacob. He had a trial in the wilderness. I could take you to Joseph. He had his trial before God made him the savior of his family. I can take you to Moses. He had his trial and found himself in the wilderness. I could go on and on and on. Even Jesus went to the wilderness for 40 days and was tempted before he ever started his earthly ministry. You see, the wilderness is part of the process. The wilderness is part of the journey. It's in the wilderness, hear me, that you learn to trust in the Lord. It's in the wilderness that you realize you can't do it yourself. It's in the wilderness that reveals who you are, but more importantly, it reveals to you who your God is. You see, the wilderness is so important in the process of our lives. We shouldn't get discouraged when we go through the wilderness, because we need to understand God has a purpose for it. The reason I'm here is because I'm going to learn something. God's going to reveal himself to me. I'm going to see the hand of God in a way that I've never seen before. It was here that the man sought after by God is driven to the wilderness. The Bible says that God said, I sought after a man. And this man, he drives to the wilderness. I'm sure David doesn't understand. I'm sure sometimes he wonders, has God forsaken me? I'm sure sometimes he questions his calling to be king. I know I've been anointed. I know the hand of God is on my life. I know that God chose me, but my current situation does not reveal that. What I've been called for and what I feel as God has led me and what God has told me, my current situation contradicts that calling. My current status tells me a different story. Wait a minute, is that really going to take place in your life? And so David begins to run. Last week, we sort of jumped over David running for his life. We didn't get into this too far. And so I'm going to kind of slow down here and jump into this portion of the story. We showed you last week how Saul tried to kill David two different times with a javelin. How he tried to send David on missions that would get him killed by the Philistines. And I also showed you how that David behaved himself wisely and he was faithful to Saul and God prospered him. This caused Saul to change his strategy. Because soon after David is married to Michal, Saul has now decided, I'm not going to let chance get him. I'm going to make sure it gets done myself. I'm not going to leave it to the Philistines to do it. You see, Saul was slipping down a path. He was starting to walk down an area where he was getting farther and farther and farther away. You see, he started off saying, I'll let the Philistines do it. And now he's to the point. He's saying, you know what? I'm going to take care of this one. And I want you to read 1 Samuel chapter 19. And Saul spake to Jonathan his son and to all his servants that they should kill David. I want you to see that. He doesn't spare anything right there. Saul spake to Jonathan. He spake to all his servants. He said, look, if any of you get a chance, kill him. That marks David pretty heavily right there. Because Saul had a lot of servants. He was the king. And they were all told to kill David. Now, obviously, there was plenty that didn't that loved David. There was plenty that had respect for David. There's plenty that would not kill David. We're going to see something here in a little bit. But what's interesting here is that Jonathan, I'm kind of going to kind of skip some things and kind of jump through the passage. You can read this whole story, and hopefully after you read it, after I'm done, it'll all kind of add up. But what's interesting here is Jonathan tries to intervene, because you know the story. Jonathan loved David. Jonathan and David were knit at the heart. They were close friends. They loved each other very dearly. And so Jonathan says, well, it's my dad, and I love my dad, and it's David. He's my best friend, and I love him. Let me see if there's somehow I can intervene. And he gets Saul. And he actually does accomplish something, because Saul, he gets him to change his mind temporarily. And during this time, David, it's kind of interesting. Now, Saul has made a decree for everybody to kill David. Jonathan intervenes for just a moment, and David still goes out and fights the Philistines. And he defeats them. Now watch this in 1 Samuel 19, verse 7. I just jumped a bunch of verses. And Jonathan called David, and he showed him all those things. And Jonathan brought David to Saul, and he was in his presence as in time past. In other words, everything seemed right. And there's war again. Guess who goes out? David went out and fought with who? I want you to catch this, the Philistines. You're going to see this. This is so amazing to me. He fights with the Philistines, and he slew them with a great slaughter, and they fled from him. The Philistines feared David. But watch this. And the evil spirit from the Lord was upon Saul as he sat in his house with his javelin in his hand, and David played with his hand. David comes back. This is such an amazing thing. Now, Saul was already saying, I'm going to kill him. David goes out. He does Saul's business. He defeats the Philistines again. He comes back before Saul, has his armor hung up, and starts playing his harp. And Saul sought to smite him, even to the wall with the javelin, but he slipped away out of Saul's presence, and he smote the javelin into the wall, and David fled and escaped that night. I want you to notice this is now the third time Saul has tried to kill David with his javelin, and now this is the third time he's missed. I said it last week, either he's a bad aim, or God had a hand of protection upon David, and Saul knew it. It was here that Saul decides that we will get him in the morning. He escaped tonight, but in the morning, he's a dead man. 1 Samuel chapter 19 and verse 11. And Saul also sent messengers unto David's house to watch him and to slay him in the morning. And Michal, David's wife, told him, saying, if thou wilt not thy life tonight, tomorrow you'll be dead. I'll just paraphrase that. If you don't get out of here tonight, tomorrow you're a dead man. What's amazing to me here is that everything around him seems to be crumbling. He's a wanted man with a price on his head. He's committed no wrong, yet he is now being pursued with a death sentence. Saul has men spying for him. He has his house guarded so that he cannot use the doors. And he is going to have to make a daring escape. So what does David do? He sits down and writes a psalm. What were psalms? Psalms were prayers. They were poems. They were hymns that focused the worshiper's thoughts on God in praise or adoration. In other words, David said, before I get ready to flee and before I leave this place, I'm going to offer a prayer to God. I'm going to sing a song to God. I'm going to sit down. Watch this. Psalms chapter 59, verse 1. To the chief musician, Eliashib, Michtam of David, when Saul sent and they watched his house to kill him, it was marked that this was when he wrote the psalm, deliver me from mine enemies, O my God. Defend me from them that rise up against me. Deliver me from the workers of iniquity and save me from bloody men. For lo, they lie in wait for my soul. The mighty are gathered against me, not for my transgression. Remember, he was innocent. Nor for my sin, O Lord. They run and prepare themselves without my fault. Awake to help me, and behold, thou therefore, O Lord God of hosts, the God of Israel, awake to visit all the heathen. Be not merciful to any wicked transgressors, Selah. They return at evening. They make a noise like a dog and go round about the city. Behold, they belch out with their mouth. Swords are in their lips. For who said, they doth hear. But watch this. He doesn't leave this there. But thou, O Lord, he begins to worship God. He begins, first of all, to begin to ask God to help him. Ask God to defend him. Ask God to watch over him. But then he says, O Lord, thou laugh at them. Thou shalt have all the heathen in derision. Because of his strength, I will wait upon thee. For God is my defense. He says, it doesn't matter. They can have my house surrounded. They can try to come against me, but I know who my God is. I know he's in control, and I know he's got my defense. I thought that was so amazing. Here it was. He's in the middle of being pursued. His house is guarded. What's he do? Let's write a little poem. Let's write a little prayer. David pursued after God. Do you want to know why David kept slipping away while David was never caught? It's because he understood something. Watch this. David escapes out of the window. He sneaks away. And I think it's here. I think God has a sense of humor. I really do. Now remember, God rejected Saul. How many know that when Saul was first became king, he prophesied? Saul, you know, would come and he would get with the prophets and he would begin to prophesy and say all kinds of things. And we don't know what all he said, but he would prophesy. And then we know God rejected him and he wouldn't feel the presence of God and he wouldn't have God around him anymore. He'd only have the evil spirits that were coming against him and messing with his mind and tormenting him. David escapes. He sneaks away. Saul sought after David. He blames his daughter for conspiring against him. And then he finds out that David has ran to Samuel. Uh-oh, this sounds like trouble. David runs to Samuel. I think this is only fitting. If you think about this for a minute, I think this is fitting because it was Samuel who anointed David some 7 years earlier. It was this Samuel who had placed the anointing over David and who had called David and told David, God has his hand on your life. God's going to use you. God's going to do something great through you. God has a great plan for your life. And now David, confused, bewildered, not sure what's going on, says, well, I know where I've got to run. I need to get back to the prophets. Fact was, David knew where to run. He knew where to go. He said, I got to get back to Samuel. So Saul finds out where David is. So what's he do? He goes hunting for him. Now the story is quite humorous. And I only wish the Bible gave us some detail as to what was actually said, because Saul sends messengers to take David. He says, watch, I'm going to read 1 Samuel chapter 19, verse 20. And Saul sent messengers to take David. Where were they going to take him? More than likely, they're taking David to the grave. If not, they're going to bring him back to Saul, and Saul's going to take him to the grave. All right, one way or another, if they get their hands on David, David's a dead man. And Saul sent messengers to take David. And watch this. I tell you, God has a sense of humor. And when they saw the company of the prophets prophesying, here's Samuel. I don't know if David was sitting there with Samuel and sitting beside Samuel, but you see Samuel here, if I could paint a picture, and you see all the prophets around him, and the prophets are prophesying. I don't know what they're saying. I don't know what they're prophesying about. I wish I did. I wish the Bible recorded it, but it doesn't. It just says they were prophesying. And Samuel standing as appointed over them. And the Spirit of God was upon the messengers of Saul. And they also prophesied. Now get this. Here's Samuel. He's over all the prophets. The prophets are all prophesying. Here comes the messengers of Saul. We're coming to get you, right? They come into where these guys are. And the Spirit of God hits them like it had hit everybody else there. And they begin to prophesy. They're supposed to be killing David. And now they're speaking prophecies. I kind of have a feeling they were saying that Saul's been rejected. God sought after a man after his own heart. And he's found David. I kind of have a feeling these prophecies were concerning the future with David. That's just my personal opinion. I can't prove it. But you can't prove me wrong. It's just not, no one knows, all right? It's just out there. So think about this. It doesn't happen once. It doesn't happen twice. It happens three times. So three times they come. Three different sets of messengers. Can you imagine now the host of messengers that are standing around Samuel who are prophesying? And so Saul finally says, you know what? I'm tired of sending these messengers. I'm going myself. They can't do it. I'm going to do it. And so Saul goes to get him. Now watch 1 Samuel chapter 19, 20. God has a sense of humor. Then went he also to Ramah and went to a great well that is Sechu, and they asked and said, where are Samuel and David? And one said, behold, they are be at Naoth in Ramah. And he went thither to Naoth in Ramah. And the Spirit of God was upon him also. This was the man who God had rejected. And here, the Spirit of God comes upon him. He's literally on his way, and the Spirit of God hits him, and now he begins to prophesy just like the rest of them. God does so much humiliating to him that the Bible says, and he stripped off his clothes also, and he prophesied before Samuel in like manner, and lay down naked all that day and all that night. Wherefore, they say, is Saul also among the prophets? He wasn't naked as we think of. He had stripped off his kingly robes. He had stripped off that which... What was God doing? God was showing him, you have been rejected, my friend. You are no longer king. I am having you prophesy. There's coming another who's going to take your place. God literally humiliates him. He takes his garments off of him. Now, this is so interesting here, because remember, David is at Ramah with Samuel. Saul comes to Ramah to get Samuel. Saul begins to prophesy. And while Saul is at Ramah prophesying, you ready? David escapes and goes to Jonathan. God literally provides the escape for David. And you, if you read chapter 20, this is where Jonathan and David make a pact between themselves. You know the story where they make this pact and they say, you know, you go stand out in the field somewhere. When I shoot that arrow, if it goes beyond you and I say it's farther, young man, you need to know you need to flee. And they make this deal. They get a chance to have this set up. Why? Because God delayed Saul at Ramoth to give David a chance to get to Jonathan, to get this whole thing set up, because God is protecting David. They make this pact, they devise a plan and find out whether Saul is going to try to kill David or whether David is going to return to the kingdom. It is at this point that we know David begins to run for his life. And for the next 8 years of his life, David is a wanted man. He is pursued all over the wilderness by Saul. And it's here that I want to show you how David was a man who sought after God. We already see that when David first began to run, where did he run to first? He ran to Samuel. He ran to the prophet. Now David realizes that his life is in jeopardy. So he is ready to go on the run. But here's the deal. He has no food. He has no weapon. He has a small band of men that go with him. So what does he do? It's amazing to me where he runs. He runs to the priest. His first move was to the prophet. His second move was to the priest. In other words, I believe David said, I want a man of God walking in my life. I want a man of God to always be there, to always, that's where he wanted to run. He knew where to go. I want to find somebody who I know is in right relationship with God, who's talking to God, who can tell me what I'm supposed to do. He runs to the priest. It's here that he eats of the showbread from the tabernacle, and it's here that he gets his weapon. And I think it's so cool and also so curious that David here comes to the priest. He gets the sword of Goliath. Think about this. He got the one weapon that he had won some 4 to 5 years ago. He wins a weapon, and now it's in the hands of the priest. But the question hit me, why did the priest have it? Why would the priest have the sword of Goliath? I mean, why didn't David have it? Why didn't Saul have it? This was obviously a very valuable piece. Why did it make its way to the priests? I began to think about this for a moment, and it hit me. There were already three very special items that were held by the priests. All three of these items showed the power of God. It was the tables of stone, it was Aaron's rod that budded, and it was the pot of manna. All three of these were already in the possession of the priests. And they all show that God had this great power. I don't know if David, when he gets back, he walks up to the priest and he says, I want you to have this as a show of the power of God, because I didn't kill that giant. God did. And so the weapon is with the priest. And now he's running for his life. His faith is low. He goes back to the priests and he retrieves that sword, which was God's power over his enemy. Now, I can tell you his faith was low. I can tell you it was low here when he was talking to the priest, because we find that it was here that David actually lies to the priest. I don't care how you slice it, David lied to the priest. He told the priest, I'm on errand from the king. He was not on errand from the king. He was running for his life from the king. The king had not sent him for any business. David was running for his life. He lied to the priest. Yeah. His faith had dipped to a low level. He was in a hurry. Then we find that he leaves the priests and he goes to the king of the Philistines. Now think about this. How many times have we read already, just in these few chapters, we probably started somewhere around 18, we're now at somewhere around 21. How many times has David been defeated by the Philistines? None. Every time the Philistines ever came against him, he decimated them. They were afraid of David. David is now in his possession, going to the king of the Philistines with the sword of Goliath. Now think about this. He's defeated them at every turn. He has Goliath's sword with him, but watch what he does in 1 Samuel 21, verse 10. And David arose and fled that day for fear of Saul and went to Achish, the king of Gath. And the servants of Achish said unto him, think about that. He'd already got Goliath of Gath. Now he's going to the king of Gath. Probably more of a governor, but we'll go there. And the servants of Achish said unto him, is not this David the king of the land? Think about this. This is Achish's servants. They say, ain't this David the king? Wait a minute. Back up. Is not this David the king of the land? Read that again. Look what they said. Is not this David the king of the land? In other words, this is that man who nobody can touch. This is the mighty David. No, he's not the king of Israel. They didn't say he was king of Israel, but they recognized that Israel had its power because of David. They recognized who the man was who had defeated them time and time and time and time again. And they said, this is that man. He's David. He's the king of the land. Nobody can touch us. This is the man that they sing not one to another of him. And they dance and they say, Saul hath slain his thousands, but David is 10,000s. I want you to see that song, that poem, that statement had now reached the Philistines. Let me tell you this. They were as much afraid of David as David was afraid of them. Watch. And David laid up these words in his heart and was sore afraid of Achish, the king of Gath. And he changed his behavior before them, and he feigned himself mad in their hands. And he scrabbled on the doors. I'm not gonna act that one out for you, because you might all think it's real. And you have me committed or something. He feigned himself mad in their hands. He scrabbled on their doors and on the gate. You know, he was slobbering and, I don't know, he was foaming at the mouth or whatever, letting spittle run down his beard. And I mean, he's just making a fool of himself. Why? Because he's afraid of them. He's acting crazy so that they'll think he's a crazy man. He must have lost his marbles. We'll just send him out somewhere. He's no harm to us. He can't bother us. There's no need fighting against him. Watch. Then Achish said unto his servants, lo, ye see the man is mad. Wherefore have ye brought him to me? Why have you even brought him to me? He's crazy. Have I need of a madman that ye have brought this fellow to play the madman in my presence? Shall this fellow come into my house? I don't even want him around me. He's crazy. And it's here that David is sent away. Think about this. But here in this time, remember, he's not sure what to do. His faith is low. He's obviously not thinking clearly, nor acting in a right manner. He's lying. He's playing the fool. When you're under stress and you don't think properly. You don't think clearly. It's the worst time to make decisions. And David is in this time of his life. He is so confused and so bewildered. And I don't know what's going on. God must have walked away from me. Something's not working here. I know I was called. I know God's prospered my life, but now I'm running. Now I'm a dead man. He finds himself in the cave of Adullam. And it's here that people begin to gather around him. Look at this list in 1 Samuel chapter 22, verse 1 and 2. David therefore departed thence and escaped to the cave Adullam. And when his brethren and all his father's house heard it, they went down thither to him. And everyone that was in distress, and everyone that was in debt, and everyone that was discontented gathered themselves unto him, and he became the captain over him. And there were with him about 400 men. I want you to notice something, though. When he escaped, who's the Bible mentioned first? His brothers. Remember, his brothers were fighting for Saul. Some of them were. His brothers ran to come to him. Why? Because they were now in threat by Saul. Saul would have spied them with contempt, and Saul would have come against him. All his father's house went down to him. Why? Because Saul would have killed them. And they run to David for protection. But it wasn't just them. Anyone that was in distress went to David. Those that were in debt went to David. Those that were discontented, those that weren't happy with what Saul was doing and recognized the way Saul was acting, they ran to David and they gathered themselves in him. And it becomes a band of about 400 men. But that's not the only thing I want you to see here. Something else takes place. Now remember, David just got done acting like a crazy man. He just gets done acting nuts, and he writes another psalm, Psalm 56. Be merciful unto me, O God, for this man would swallow me up. He fighteth me daily, oppresseth me. Mine enemies would daily swallow me up, for they be many that fight against me, O thou most high. What time I am afraid, I will trust in thee. In God I will praise his word. In God I will put my trust. I will not fear what flesh can do unto me. I want you to notice what's taking place. David had just acted a fool. David had just been afraid of people who were pursuing him. But now he's alone, and now he's in a cave, and now he begins to think on the things of God, and he begins to write. He begins to say, with time I am afraid, I will trust in thee. Even though I may have fear from time to time come into my heart, and I may get afraid of what people might do to me, I will still trust in thee. In God I will praise his word, in God I will put my trust. I will not fear what flesh can do unto me. Every day they rest my words. All their thoughts are against me for evil. They gather themselves together. They hide themselves. They mark my steps when they wait for my soul. Shall they escape by iniquity? In thine anger cast down the people, O God. Tellest my wanderings, put thou my tears into thy bottle. Are they not in thy book? In other words, God, you see my tears. You see my cries. When I cry unto thee, then shall my enemies turn back. This I know, God, for God is for me. He says, look, I cry, but am I crying? My tears don't just fall on the ground. My tears are making their way into the corridors of heaven. And God, you are marking my tears. God, you are marking the times when I cry unto you. And every time I do, you do something on my behalf. Why? Because God, you're with me. You're for me. In God I will praise his word. In the Lord I will praise his word. In God I have put my trust. I will not be afraid what man can do unto me. Thy vows are upon me, O God. I will render praises unto thee. For thou hast delivered my soul from death. Wilt not thou deliver my feet from falling? That I may walk before God in the right light of the living. Here's the deal. That's such a beautiful poem. But you know what? He doesn't just write one there. It appears he writes two. Because Psalms 57, it's to the chief musician, Atlas Cheth of Michtam of David, when he fled from Saul in the cave. Be merciful unto me, O God. Be merciful unto me, for my soul trusteth in thee. In the shadow of thy wings will I make my refuge. Unto these calamities be overpast. I will cry unto God most high, unto God that performeth all things for me. He shall send from heaven and save the reproach of him that would swallow me up, Selah. For God shall send forth his mercy and his truth. My God is among lions, and I lie even among them that are set on fire. Even the sons of men whose teeth are spears, whose arrows and their tongue are a sharp sword. Be exalted, O God, above the heavens. Let thy glory be above all the earth. They have prepared a net for my steps. My soul is bowed down. They have digged a pit for me into the midst thereof, whereon they are fallen themselves. Selah, my heart is fixed, O God. My heart is fixed. I will sing and give praise. Awake up my glory. Awake psaltery and harp. I myself will awake early. I will praise thee, O Lord, among the people. I will sing unto thee among the nations. For thy mercy is great unto the heavens, and thy truth unto the clouds. Be thou exalted, O God, above the heavens. Let thy glory be above all the earth. David, in a time of distress, sitting down in a cave, says, I may be a man sought after, but I'm going to be a man that seeks after. I may be pursued, but I'm going to pursue one. I may have somebody coming for my life, but I'm going for the giver of life. I'm going to pursue him. I'm going to chase after him. I'm going to find him. Everything around me may seem crazy. It may not make sense. The things may not, they may not add up. But I'm still going to pursue him. I like what he says. It says, I'm fixed. My heart is fixed, O God. My heart is fixed. I may be low, I may be cast down, I may be distraught, I may be in trouble, but it doesn't matter. My heart is fixed upon God. You can't take that. You can't remove that. I'm going to stop right here. It's already 8:30, and I'm going to stop right here. We got a long way to go in this, but it's probably a good place to stop. But if I can, I hope you're seeing tonight the heart of David. I hope you're seeing how this story, as I began to go into this, I began to see the Psalms in a different light. Because all of a sudden, just things started. I mean, David, I could go on and list the Psalms they accredit to him. There's about 70, 73 to 75 of them they attribute to David. And I could go in and list them all for you. But I wanted to show you where some of them actually fit inside of the stories. While David is in this trouble, and while David is in this calamity, David's running. I mean, think about it. He's getting ready to jump out a window. You know, he's going to try to slide down a window, make this daring escape. Before he does, he says, hold on, I've got to write a psalm. I've got to write a prayer unto God. Here he is. He just made a fool of himself. He just acted crazy. He even lied. He's running for his life, is fearful. What's he do? He sits down in a cave and says, God, I know I've messed up, and I know I've done some things, but I'm going to put my trust in you. My heart's still fixed on you. I may feel low right now. I may feel in trouble, but I'm still fixed on you. Jesus, God, we thank you for your word. God, I pray, Lord, that tonight this is talk to someone's heart. God, this is more than just psalms, but God, these are prayers. These are songs of worship and adoration, showing just how great you are and showing your hand that is at work in our lives and showing how we can cry out to you at any point, at any time. We can come before your throne, Lord, and obtain mercy and help in a time of need. Lord, your word tells us we can come boldly before you. Your word tells us, God, we can seek you and find you and draw nigh to you. And God, I pray, Lord, that there would be a group of people here who would be people who were sought after, but God, who would be people who would seek after. God, who would have a heart to seek after you. God, in the midst of no matter what they're going through, whether it's good or whether it's bad, God, I pray that our hearts would seek after you. And God, I ask, Lord, that you'll be with each one. Lord, go with us and help us. Lord, as we go through the remainder of our week, Lord, I pray that you would guide our steps, and Lord, that you would make our paths straight, and God, that you would lead us, Lord, where you want us to go, and Lord, make our way prosperous. In Jesus' name, amen.